Welcome to the Write the Docs podcast. You'll see a slightly different array of faces at the bottom of your screen if you're watching, of course, today. Jared is detained with family issues, but we have me and Tom here, and we have our special guest, I think pretty much in the same time zone as Tom. I'm not sure, maybe slightly different. And maybe you'd like to introduce yourself, our guest. You can probably do a better job than we can.
So my name's Becky Todd. I'm closer to Tom than you are. I'm in the central time zone, so it's about 2:30 in the afternoon for me. I currently work as a technical writer at Atlassian, and I specifically specialize in developer documentation, content strategy, and a bunch of other stuff. I'm never sure how to introduce myself, but basically I'm very passionate about docs, and I try to inspire that in others, and also get my work done so that someone gives me a paycheck. So that's the part that I always
try. Surely inspiring people should be a paycheck.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, okay. So our sort of particular topic or collection of topics, which I think we all have slightly different perspectives on, which is good, but this episode is career growth, leadership, mentorship, the career ladder, I guess, as a tech writer. I think it's something that quite a lot of us have come to a certain point. And depending on the size of the company, there's sort of opportunities or not. So does anyone have any initial thoughts to throw in before we get kind of into the chunk of it all?
I'm excited about this topic, actually. I think it is timely. We were talking about how it's relevant to us. And in particular, I know that one of my goals this year is I'm trying to do the things necessary to level up in my current work. Like, what does it take to go from one level to the next? You know, it's an interesting question. It's a nice goal to have, even if it, I don't know if it has any larger meaning beyond just feeling successful in your role at the corporation, but definitely, I've been trying to like chart my path and figure out, well, what do I have to do to go to the next level up? What are the requirements? How is it assessed and evaluated and things like that? And of course, the next level up, they describe a higher level of leadership that you're performing at that level.
And Becky, I mean, maybe we should set some sort of ground here. Where do you consider yourself kind of in the very loose ladder of tech writing career? Ladder. I didn't think about that sentence, but where do you kind of see yourself at the moment personally?
That's a really good question. Like Tom, I'm kind of in a place where I'm trying to level up, and I've been working on that for a while. So they call me a senior writer, but over the last couple of years, I've learned that can mean really, really different things depending on what organization you're in. And so one thing that I guess to answer your question, in the middle somewhere, whatever that means.
I guess so. I run my own business, but I've been grappling with this question a little bit because I got to a point where I had enough interest that I haven't been hiring people. I didn't want to start a company, but I've been subcontracting people and trying to scale that business. But I'm at that point where I'm still trying to figure out if that's worth it or not. If the effort of managing people, which is actually a lot of work and has made me realize how much work managers actually do. Is it worth it to me? Is that something I want to be doing? And if I don't, what else do I do? So I'm kind of also at that point. and of course, I guess depending on the client I'm working with, and it somewhat depends where you are in their ladder as well.
Do you think that it's necessary to become a manager in order to move up to the next level in your
organization? I don't know. It's just something I'm trying, I suppose.
I mean, it's the classic track, right? It's like, if you become a manager, you're the next level. And then if you manage managers, you're the next level. But it seems like that track, I don't want to really be a manager. I'm more of an individual contributor. And it seems like there should be a path where an individual contributor can exert influence, but I'm kind of like on the fence because I think the sort of influence that people talk about when they look at higher level leadership is only the kind of influence you can exert if you are a manager and can talk with other higher level up people. You know, if you've ever tried to talk to somebody who's like three levels up from you at a company, it's at least in my experience, it doesn't always go so well. So feel somewhat out of place.
I think it can be intimidating to talk to somebody that's a few levels different from you, depending on the way your organization's set up. So I was faced with a decision about, should I go down sort of a manager track or go down the individual contributor, if you want to call it that, or the craft track several years ago. And I sat on that decision for probably about 2 years, not knowing what to do. And I don't know if I've actually come up with, like, I really want to go down one way or the other, because I enjoy, you know, in my day-to-day leading teams, but I also don't enjoy, like, managing people's sick time and all of the paperwork and being a manager part of it. So what I've been really trying to think about lately is, what would, like, in leadership without authority, and what does that mean for technical writers? Because I think with our role in particular, it's not seen as a role that has a lot of authority associated with it.
I think this does very much depend on the company. It's interesting. I'm in one project at the moment where I wouldn't say there's authority, but there's certainly leadership possible. And I know in the kind of discussion document, we've separated these terms out a little bit because they don't mean the same thing per se, where I'm the only person who is even kind of considered a writer. And in this case, it means in a company that's 140 people, which is not huge, but it's big enough, I can put my hand up for things that are somewhat related to communication, and people will say, yeah, sure, okay, go for it, so, because there's no one else doing it. So it can kind of depend on the company as well, I suppose. I don't know, I think you both work in what, in my opinion anyway, are much larger, maybe more structured companies, but how do you feel if you could, you both already said that talking to someone three levels up, whatever that means, could be an intimidating thing. Have you tried? How did it go, I guess?
Well, I think the danger is, if you're talking with somebody who's several levels up from you, the immediate question would be, why isn't your manager talking with them? Like, are you going around your manager in order to try to, like, lift yourself above? Like, it's a little bit of a disconnect there. But, you know, coming back to this company size thing, this is interesting because even if you're at a large company, you could still be a solo writer embedded in an engineering team. You're not necessarily part of this giant centralized doc team. Of course, those do exist, but in my case, there are just three of us on our team, plus our manager. We're not the 100-plus writing group. So, and our manager, she's like, her background is marketing. You know, it's not necessarily a doc role. It's more of a managerial role. You don't necessarily have to be a doc tech com expert to do well. So it really depends on your team. And if the trend for tech writer employment is to be the solo embedded writer on an engineering team, then those opportunities for moving up the management chain seem much less available, you know.
I think that has varied a lot from company to company. I've been a solo writer. I've been on very small teams. And in my current job, I'm technically part of a larger writer organization that's over 30 people, or probably more than that at this point. But my individual team is only about 4 or 5 people at any given time. But I'm not embedded with any products. So I sort of interact with the whole organization. So I help coach other teams on how to do documentation and how to write. So in some ways, I act as a consultant. And so that actually, people look at me whenever they're having that kind of interaction with me as having, you know, some expertise. And so that can actually be kind of uncomfortable at times, where when I've, in prior roles, I have been, you know, like, I'm the writer for this thing, or I'm involved with this team. So it's natural, like, there's a give and take there. Whereas today I come in, I do some things, people reach out to me, and then I sort of move on to the next group, which can be really strange and uncomfortable feeling at first, if I'm being honest.
So you teach different groups how to do documentation, is that right? Like, you're a kind of a writing trainer, or not trainer, but writing consultant at your group, at your company?
That's one way to describe it. I think what it is I work with our standards and our publishing platform. And so what I'm helping is we have teams that are like a new service or something will come online. And so I will be helping them get their initial documentation processes set up or get their documentation onto our documentation platform. Or I might help them with a new API or something whenever that comes through.
Okay. I think this was one of our first formal questions, which we're sort of skirting around a little bit. I think we're all tending to lean towards preferring the term leadership as opposed to management. I mean, I think in technical companies especially, this is not so clear cut anyway. And I would also like, I think, forgive me if I'm wrong, audience, that the three of us kind of do elements of leadership in various ways, Tom with his blog, Becky within the company, and I do presentations and things like that, trying to spread the word to other people. What does leading writers or mentoring writers, if you want to get into that term, mean to each of you?
I have some thoughts, but I don't want to jump straight out. So Becky, do you have any thoughts you want to share on that?
Sure. I think, well, if we want to talk about mentorship for a second, when you're coming into technical writing and it's a new role for you, whether or not you're coming at it from a background of I got trained as a writer in college or I did a different role and now I want to be a technical writer, figuring out what you do and don't need to do on a daily basis can be really, really tough. And so I think figuring that initial bit out at the company or role that you're in can be really challenging. So I know in my experience, I didn't have a lot of guidance for the first couple years. And then I learned really quickly that I could reach out to other people with really specific questions and get advice. And several, you know, that went on for a while and several years went by and then I realized people were reaching out to me for advice, which was really weird at first because I still don't consider myself an expert a lot of the time. Probably I deal with imposter syndrome specifically because it's like, why would you ask me? There are all these other people that know the answers to this question. But at the same time, okay, that trailed off. Sorry. I don't know where I was going with that.
Yeah, the imposter syndrome is an interesting.
Struck again. Yes.
Yeah. I think we all suffer from that, right? Especially in contexts where you're going into groups that don't know you, you have to suddenly remember your own background and expertise. Whereas if you're in the same familiar team, people sort of recognize your expertise because you've built it up for so many weeks and months. I think coming back to your question, Chris, my opinion about what does it mean to develop these leadership qualities outside of management? For me, it's really about somebody who can fix all the broken processes that exist within a group, implement it, literally change them into successful processes. It could be processes around ensuring quality control around documentation. You know, how do you know if your docs are good? Establishing a standard. Figuring out a process to make sure the docs meet that standard. It could be awareness of your group among other organizational teams. How do people know about you and what you do? Could be fixing an intake process where, you know, your team might constantly be caught at the last minute with these huge doc requests and you come in and you say, oh, we're going to implement this intake process that will establish more planning and prioritization of different topics up front. So in my mind, and this is actually where I would love to get your input, is if leadership often involves implementing processes to kind of improve things around you, where do you learn how to implement processes? Like process implementation is not something I have no idea how it's really supposed to be done, like for whatever area. That it might involve. I mean, my background has always been like, oh, here's how you approach this documentation and the technology, but these are processes, it's a different beast. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that's where I didn't learn that in school or anywhere either, other than by doing it. And some of it was trial and failure. And early on, I had the opportunity to work at a couple of places where there were the ability, was given the space to try things and fail, and learning from mistakes. But I think that's where mentorship comes in my mind, in that if you know you need to do something and you know what the result is, but you struggle to figure out how to implement a process, you can reach out to somebody within your company or someone who's done that before and say, you know, I'm at this point, I'm struggling with this or this. Do you have any advice? Has been really, really helpful for me.
I think you gave us a very nice lead to our next question. Mistakes we've made. Mistakes we've made with leadership, with mentorship, whatever we want to maybe group into this section, and what we learn from them. It's a difficult one to answer, isn't it? I always get this in job interviews and things, don't you? And you, you try to figure out the least worst one to give. So I don't know. Who wants to begin?
Well, I can do this.
Okay.
I'm okay with saying, like, I've messed up a lot of things. And I think it's important to share that, in particular if people are looking at you as a leader, is to say, I can mess up too, and it's okay if I messed up because I learned this lesson. A mistake that I made a couple years ago when I was working with a new hire was that we were under a tremendously important and very specific deadline. And the person that I was working with was doing the best that they could, but I was trying to help them too much in doing what they were doing, and I wasn't letting them learn. So one of the mistakes that I realized that I was making was I was probably the worst possible kind of manager at that point in time, because I was trying to help them by not letting them fail a deadline. But what I wound up doing was sort of over shepherding them. And so they weren't able to figure out how to plan their time and things like that. But I acknowledged that and said, hey, look, I've been doing this thing. Has this been, you know, affecting you? And we had a really good discussion about it and moved on. I have since learned it's okay to let people have a little bit more leeway and don't give them a safe place to try new things, but don't let them go off the rails. And so I think I was going a little bit too far in the don't go off the rails section.
I think I have a current one at the moment, so I got to be a bit careful how I mention this. I guess so. I have been trying to scale my own business and taking on people, and there's one client at the moment where I took on a writer who I think is doing a good job. One part of that was a fairly big and complex piece of work, and I had a lot of travel coming up. And they seemed happy to go with it and work on this piece of work. And I kind of fell out of the loop of communication and did some other things and was distracted by other things. And then this person kind of got dragged into a somewhat drawn out, complicated communication process with the client, and which didn't necessarily go very constructively. And I'd sort of been out of it too long to really help and get involved. So I kind of put myself in as being the person who would help them deal with the client, and then didn't really. And possibly, yeah. What I've learned, I think, if I was to do this again, is to probably not try to coincide big other commitments with big bits of work, I suppose. That's a hard one to always know if that's going to be possible, but I think it's something I definitely have picked up. I somewhat ruined the relationship with the client, I think, a little bit because of it. So yeah, maybe that's that's one at the moment.
Well, we're all sharing our mistakes.
Come on, Tom, you gotta have one.
So, of course. Which one? No, I think most recently so our doc platform sort of fragmented in three different ways. We had three different groups using it, and it was going fine. But then one group wanted like more autonomy, and their tools team wanted to take it in a certain direction. And another team had a similar thing where they wanted to do something different. They wanted to implement all these cool filters. And we're like, you know what? We're fine with it is with the platform as it is. And now we've got like three different fragments of the platform. And I just sort of sat back and said, you want to do that? Go for it. You know, you have complete freedom to do whatever you want. You know, you want to fork it and build your own. You want to hire an engineering team to build your own solution for 6 months. That's your prerogative. But in retrospect, that's probably not a very leadershipy thing to do. It's sort of my fallback where I just want to let people do what they want to do and I do what I want to do. For me, the hard part about leadership is trying to get other people to change. I'm much more comfortable with just restricting my actions to my own self. But if the moment I have to try to persuade somebody else to adopt something, persuade somebody to say, hey, no, you should stay in the same platform because we have more like weight in numbers or something, or you know, trying to get a colleague to embrace a certain process rather than just saying, oh, he can do what he wants, I'll do what I want, and this is how we'll operate. And that's sort of, that doesn't come natural for me. I don't like to try to get other people to do things that I think are important. I'd rather just let them do what they want.
I'd actually like to ask a slightly leading question here before we kind of move out of this section, because it's something I've picked up, I think, from all of us, and all of us working in kind of, if not technical, well, I think we all work in technical companies, yeah, okay. who tend to have somewhat higher, flattish structures, and in engineers especially, or technical people, tend to have the privilege of having less structure and less kind of, they're given more freedom in decisions than maybe some other companies. And yeah, I sometimes wonder if, do you sometimes wonder if that's as problematic as it is helpful? You know, the fact that everyone can kind of have an opinion, and sometimes it can, but there's a lot of people who are not necessarily wanting to be, as you say, Tom, not the person who kind of says, this is what you have to do. And we all kind of say, yeah, let's just all do what we want to do. And and of course that doesn't always work very well.
We have a principle in my company called have backbone, disagree, and commit, or something like that. And it's that same principle where, hey, speak up if you've got an opinion, especially if it's based on data. Don't be a fly on the wall. You know, make your case. And if you believe passionately about it, you should really move forward. And then if a different decision is made, you're supposed to fall in line with that. But definitely when we interview candidates, we're looking to see if they have backbone about things. And when they disagree with something, what do they do to try to like change the situation? And it's kind of a very eye-opening sort of thing. It's hard to have when you're a technical writer and maybe you don't have a lot of influence or power to change things. It's harder to make a case for things.
So I think maybe I've been foolish or just a little bit too foolhardy in my career, but I think I tend to want to help people standardize on processes or do things in a consistent way, regardless of if your team does this process or this other process. So I tend to maybe take a different approach, which is that I go very wide whenever I want to try to inspire people to take a particular path or effort to produce documentation, for example. And I found that over time, if you can, I think maybe the approach I take is to inform people, educate them, inspire them to think about the problem, you know, from a different point of view. Because sometimes we have a value at my company that is be the change you seek, which can go really, really well, or then everyone does different things. So trying to rein that in and say, well, if you want to be the change, here's one way to go about doing it. And then just acknowledge that they may not pick that direction. But I have found that over time, especially when they know that you have expertise in tech writing, they'll come back around and tend to say, okay, well, we explored this, this, and this, and maybe this approach does work or doesn't, or we tried this approach and it didn't work, and here's what happened. I found that that's a really nice strategy when you don't have a lot of like standardized processes across a company, at least in my experience, which is a little off topic, but.
Yeah, I like that. I'd like to follow up with a question there. So let's say, Becky, you go into a group and you're trying to tell them to store code samples in Bitbucket or something, right? But let's say that team is stubborn and they're like, you know what, we're going to use GitHub because we think more of our users are there and we just want to use GitHub. I'm just making this hypothetical example of what a situation might be like. So how do you persuade them to use Bitbucket? And at what point do you draw the line and say, now you can choose, I'm no longer going to try to influence you?
Well, I think there's something to the, like, there's a bit of experience that comes in where if you have a particular problem that's being addressed in a certain way, knowing when to choose your battles, I think, is really the best advice I can give for that particular question. If you really want to get them from doing one thing and doing another, presenting evidence or maybe business rationale for why one option is a better idea versus the other could be something that you could do. But I have found that sometimes, depending on the situation, it might not be the right time and place to have that discussion yet. And so you can come back to it later or never, depending on the exact specifics.
Cool. Does that scenario ever actually come up between Bitbucket and GitHub?
Oh, you would ask that question. We actually do have a number of repositories on GitHub. We have open source projects. So that has come up actually. And, you know, I've not actually been in the place to have that discussion per se, but I have helped set up, you know, different types of repos.
I think, yeah, anyway, let's not go down that rabbit warren. Yeah. okay, actually, so there's been some interesting aspects here talking about, leadership through influence. You've talked about some examples. We have some other examples here. And again, I'll go back to the fact that, like, Tom is fairly well known for his blog, for example, which is influential in many ways. A lot of technical people will take the approach of writing a book, for example, on a particular topic, doing talks. I know plenty of developers, especially, who may not be high up, in quote marks, in their job, but are respected in their communities, for example, because of that. So what could be some ways for tech writers I guess we've covered a lot of inside maybe already, but inside or outside their company to be an influential person, a leader, I hate to use the term a thought leader, it's a bit overused, but you know what I mean, that kind of person.
I think actually you could boil this formula down to a very simple sort of strategy. Online with blogs, if you want to be influential, you write a lot about a specific topic and you publicize that to more and more people. You share it everywhere, right? That's really all it is. That's all it is. Right? I've been writing about tech doc stuff for a decade or more. And I thought, well, how do I translate that to work? And I think the same formula applies. You need to publish information and distribute it, disseminated out to a group of people on a regular basis. One of the more successful things I've done at our work was to simply put together a list of all the doc updates we'd been making in the last month or so and send it out to the engineers and the support team and the other people who are interested. And the more I share on that list of what we're doing, updates we're making, other things, the more people recognize who the doc people are, and they're like, oh, I have an update, let me just tell Tom. So we've opened that channel of communication more. So yeah, it's sometimes a little bit uncomfortable to go to a list that might have 50 people on it or 100 or 200 and say something, right? But that really increases visibility. I'm not so sure if it's going to influence people, but at least it is like one way to have people know who you are and what processes are going on.
Becky, I think you co-organize the Write the Doctor meetup in Austin, don't you? So that's one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was actually something that I was going to say. I think being able to influence people requires a certain amount of courage and confidence in saying that I know that this is a good piece of information, or I'm right about this, or my evidence tells me that this is a natural conclusion. So a number of years ago, before Write the Docs, or around the same time Write the Docs happened, just completely unrelated, I founded a meetup group in the DC area for tech writers because I was a little frustrated with not having a place to go and discuss tech writing. And so I thought, well, the opportunity is wide open because there isn't one. Why not try to do this? So I founded a meetup there, worked closely with the STC to get... Really, I just wanted to have a good place to have discussions about tech writing. If I would have known about Write the Docs at the time, I probably would have made it a Write the Docs meetup. So I wouldn't have had to have gone it completely alone and figure out pretty much everything about running a meetup and founding a thing by myself by doing it, because it was actually really hard. But I have found that if you feel like you're not somebody who wants to give talks, write blogs, or say things, there are other ways that you can actually help the community as well. Organizing meetups, helping run meetups, if you want to volunteer your venue or something like that, those types of opportunities can actually be really meaningful, and it can help you build connections for future mentors or just having those really good discussions that can help you grow throughout your career. So I think that's been a really valuable way that I've spent some of my time. On a more practical and somewhat kind of selfish side, it's also really helpful when it comes to looking for jobs, because you have the confidence and experience and you get to know a lot of people and you get to learn about things that you wouldn't have known about otherwise. So I've also found that to be quite valuable from a like career opportunity standpoint.
Is that meetup still thriving?
I looked on their page, so I handed it off to a different organizer, and they had a bunch of events last year, so I think they're still going. Yeah, it's a smaller group.
Of course, you're not there anymore. So far. Okay. And
Chris,
actually,
what about you?
So I think this does tie, what I would say ties a lot more into the lone writer area, because I've generally been a lone writer, where you can have more influence and have less influence depending on the company. So trying to find that influence outside of a company or a client is possibly more important to you if that's the sort of thing you want to do. I did a talk, I think, at Write the Docs meetup in London. I feel like it was last year, but in all honesty, it might have been the year before. I can't quite remember now. Mainly from a freelance perspective, but I think it applies in if you're a lone writer. So pretty much all the things you've mentioned so far. Events, if you are okay with talking in public to people. Blogs, etc. Podcasts like this, again, are now a new medium. If you like talking, but you don't want to talk to a room full of people, it's an option. And as are video courses and things like that. Mentorships, especially in open source communities and contributing to open source communities, we'll actually come to that in a little bit more detail shortly, is another way. If you don't actually want to, so for example, and I will give him a plug again, there's a great tool that I have been bestowing the virtues of for quite some time called Vail, which we won't go into any great detail about what that is right now, but the person behind it is not the most gregarious person. But the tool is already being quite influential. So if you kind of can find a project like that where there is a creator who is very good at what they do, but not the best person at, or not the person who wants to be the sort of person telling everyone about it and explaining it, then you can also partner up with other projects and be that person in that project as well. So that's a way you can have your influence felt through through a project that isn't your own as well. And that's especially easy in open source. So that's just a handful, but it kind of depends how out there you want to be, I suppose, really.
I have one more idea. This is more within the company space. One thing I did last year, which was a bizarre sort of request, but I wrote a competitive analysis with a competing product. It was comparing Fire TV and Roku and the developer journey. How do you submit an app to Roku from beginning to end? And how does that compare with Fire TV's app submission process from beginning to end? Where do we excel? Where do we bottom out? And the business people freaking love that stuff. I mean, they were just like eating it up, and they wanted more, and they wanted me to revise it and keep pushing it up to the next level and the next level. And for me, I was a little frustrated because it's not my job to write competitive analyses. There's actually another group that does benchmarking and performance and stuff like that. And I felt like, you know, my core work was documentation, but I'm being celebrated for the business analysis stuff. But at the same time, it was deeply informative, and I should have just kept pushing it. And yeah, if you want to do business analysis with competitor products, I bet it would be a great way to become more visible and influential at work, because it shows a lot of expertise. You'd be surprised how few people understand their competitors' products, myself included. I couldn't tell you how to develop an app for Apple TV, and that's sad. I should be able to, totally walk you through the process, but I don't. And I think it's the same way at every company, right? It's you know your product really well, but how does it stack up against others? And that's one area you can exploit if you have, time and to do that, or if you want to sink in the time to it.
Okay. So actually one of the other, we've talked a little bit here about that maybe the ladders in terms of technical writer, documentarian, whatever. I mean, people talk endlessly about what the correct job title should be. May or may not be limited. There are sort of horizontal places you can go to too. And we actually pulled together a nice little list. And I think I could even add a few more to this as well, about other roles. Maybe you've gone the full path you can as a pure API writer, but maybe there's another role that is related enough and challenges you in a new way. So maybe round the table, as it were, sort of three or four that we think people should maybe look into if they're looking for something new to take their skills to. Let's start with Becky, maybe.
So are you asking about how to branch out as a technical writer? Is that sort of what you're asking?
If you want to, so some other sorts of career paths that maybe you might not have thought about that are not 100% kind of tech writer related, but could be an interesting way to get new skills and a new level of inspiration or leadership, maybe.
Yeah, so I think a few things that you can do. You can play with different specialties within the discipline. So one of the things that I really enjoy doing is acting as an editor. I love the whole process of figuring out what to write, getting the processes done, getting it in, advising, doing the copy editing as well. But you can only take editing so far. So I've specialized in developer documentation, but I have peers that specialize in content strategy or UX writing or writing UI copy and that whole process end to end with users. So those are just some things that are kind of more on the pure side of technical writing that you could maybe do, if I'm understanding the question correctly.
Pretty much, yep. Yeah. It's late. Tom, anything you
want to throw in? Yeah, sure. I've had a number of people branch out into different careers, and this is a great question. I'm thinking, I know an old colleague of mine, Ben, he became a business analyst after we all got laid off at a certain company. He couldn't find another job as a tech writer, went into business analysis, and it stuck. He actually really likes it. Another person, let's see, this is from an old co-host, the person's not old. It's a long time ago. She was a co-host, Heidi. She became a product manager. She knew the product that she was documenting so well that she just became more and more influential until I think she was a scrum master and then finally just like a full-fledged product owner for it. I've known other people who have turned into usability. One guy I friend of mine, Ted, he was like, yeah, I used to be a tech writer and I just got so tired of trying to put band-aids on crappy interfaces. And he became a usability tester. He would ask questions, bring them in and do the whole gamut. One other person, a former colleague of mine, Mari, became an engineer, a software tester. She was always developing tools. She was like very techie and she just like wanted to become an engineer. So she just transitioned internally to the software engineering testing team. And it's like, she totally did a great job at it. She's an awesome person. So, I mean, there's a lot of related roles. And if you find yourself gravitating toward one, yeah, I mean, maybe tech docs aren't for you. I've actually felt like I might be in the wrong role a lot of times. Like I look at my blog and I think, man, I love to write things. Maybe I should become like a developer evangelist type person or marketing writer or something, you know, because like, why am I producing so much content online? Why don't I write more at work like this? Why am I not the corporate blogger at my work? But then it never goes farther than that.
Well, that sort of leads me to a question. So I know, and I may do this at some point in my career, but I know a lot of writers who sort of branch out into other things and there are practical reasons for it. Like you can only advance so far as a tech writer. There's definitely a perception that I've observed people having about that. And do you think at a certain point, there's sort of a dead end for tech writers? Like I've wondered about this myself. Where you would say, okay, well, I've gotten this far. I don't want to be a manager. If I want to be something else with a more senior title, I have to kind of go down this other route.
Possibly. I'm not 100% sure what the ideal one is. I guess I've felt in my mind that might be a product manager or product owner, but I don't necessarily know if that's even more senior. Because of that kind of holistic view you have over something, potentially, if you really want to push the boat out, you could become like a CTO, depending on the company, of course. Yeah, those are the only two I've really come up with so far. Or I guess some companies have head of communications type roles, but yeah, sort of.
But I have this discussion with my colleague every now and then. He used to be a manager of an engineering team. Like his background is an engineer, and he was a manager for a number of years. He didn't really like management. And so he switched over to like documentation and was looking into becoming like a technical program manager type person. But we talk about this perception that you have two paths. Either you're going to be like, take a management track, or you're going to become more and more technical and almost become like a consultant or just a specialist. And he says that, you know, really take a good look at yourself if you want to be a manager, if you're that type of person. Because just to become a manager because that is like the track upward doesn't make a lot of sense if you find that you hate it, right? What if you hate being a manager? It's probably doesn't pay that much more, although I don't really know. But I've trended more towards, I guess, specialization, trying to be maybe more specialized in API docs or something.
I guess the other thing you could do is side gigs as well, especially if you've been in a company for a while and you're kind of fairly efficient at it. And you potentially take a day off a week to write a book or do something else. It depends on the company, but that could be another way of increasing your kind of seniority in the space without changing your main job. Maybe.
Yeah, okay. And I think sometimes for me, when I think about this, it's about finding new challenges. And in certain roles, you only get so many things to do. And so sometimes it's just about exploring other opportunities. So,
I personally have been branching out into a far less lucrative space, but just one I've been wanting to do, and doing more game writing recently, which it's not certainly not for the money, but it's fun. Sometimes you branch out into things that just bring you pleasure. So and that makes you happy too. We touched a little bit on mentorship, but let's just wrap this up before we get to our kind of second discussion point, which we will summarize, I guess, around mentorship itself. People talk about that without necessarily, we talked about it without necessarily pinning down what that could mean. So for people who maybe are new to understanding what the term is, What do we mean by by mentorship exactly, and what sort of forms can it take inside or outside of a company?
So I think mentorship, like the simple way of describing it, is seeking advice from someone who's more experienced than you and having them give you some guidance or guide you based on their experience. I know the open source community has a really specific sort of way that they do mentorship. I have no experience with it. I just am aware of it. There's also like mentor rings and mentorship groups, and things can be very structured or very unstructured. So that's sort of the basic way to describe it in my mind.
Mm-hmm. And do you do it yourself? Have you mentored and been a mentee? That's the right word, is it?
I'm trying to think. Yes, I've done both. Yeah. Right now I'm actually mentoring a person on my team who was a developer and has decided to become a technical writer. So right now we have had a series of like one-on-ones every week where we go through sort of the basic tech writer sort of skills, like, okay, here's what tech writing skills are, right? Clearly, concisely, you know, so on and so forth. Sometimes we do pairing, and I help them skill up their writing in a particular way if they're struggling with something, or help give them structure for how to think about a particular project. So I've definitely been doing a lot of that recently. And I think it's sort of paying it forward, because I had people do that for me as well, like a long time ago, right? Because I sat down at my desk as a tech writer on my first day, and I'm like, what do I do? And they're like, make documentation? I'm like, okay, how do you do that? Way back in college. So yeah, so I like doing it for that reason. Anyway,
kind of. Can I ask you a potentially, it's going to sound far worse than it's probably going to be, potentially awkward question, but it's something I've struggled with a bit, and you already mentioned the kind of imposter syndrome. The aspect when you're pulled in to be a mentor or someone asks your advice, but you still have this niggling doubt that the advice you're giving someone is useful. It actually is based on any kind of evidence or experience. And how do you, Tom, as well, if you want to chip in, how do you get around that feeling and just actually trust that what you're saying has some merit?
I sometimes double check myself. So I will say somebody asks me about something and I know that we're going to have a discussion about it, I will go double check resources to make sure I'm not just giving opinions, because I've been doing something for so long, I just assume that I'm doing it well, right? Because no one's telling me I'm not doing it well. So I'll go and double check things. A long time ago, I helped teach chemistry labs, which is terrifying, by the way, because if you're a grad, like not even, if you're still an undergrad and you have other undergrads in a room full of, you know, dangerous chemicals with you, and they're like, I did this and this happened, you know, suddenly you're like, oh, I am the authority and I have to deal with this now. So I kind of got that experience really when I was very young, and that's given me some confidence to say, okay, well, the people that mentored me probably had the same problem and they probably didn't know what they were doing either, or felt like that at some point. So that sort of gives me a little bit more confidence in that if I mess up, I can just come back and say, I told you the wrong thing, or something, right? So I don't know. That's not really a good answer, but basically don't overthink it and check yourself, I guess.
That was a great answer. That's fine.
Sorry, I don't have a lot of thoughts on mentorship. I mean, honestly, I personally would love to have a mentor, somebody who I like totally looked up to and gave me advice and was interested in my well-being and who I could turn to and stuff. But I don't know. I'm not so sure that I know anybody who I would like really want to be my mentor. So that's kind of part of the problem. I have a big ego, I think. So
you heard it here first. But it actually, you bring up a valid point in that, especially in a niche industry like ourselves, finding a mentor for a specific topic or need is potentially challenging, because there's not that many of us, I guess.
One thing I've sort of turned to is like sort of a collective soundboard through surveys. If I write a post and I'm kind of uncertain about some things, I'll throw some survey questions in there and I can see that, oh yeah, yeah, you know, a lot of people think this or a lot of people think that, and that's helpful. And I mean, you can't disagree with dozens of people who are all saying the same thing. I, for example, just in my, when I give API documentation workshops, sometimes I give them and I think, dude, I knocked it out of the park with this one. And then I give them a feedback survey at the end and I'm like, oh, it wasn't as good as I thought. And so that kind of feedback helps me reflect and try to improve, you know? So I don't really know that it's a mentorship, but it's like getting feedback from other people to improve myself.
Sounds like mentorship to me. I think mentorship by panel, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, but actually, feedback's an important part of it, though, yeah. Right? Is it not all of it is just advice? Some of it is sort of like here's a bit of constructive criticism, or just here's how this went, and do we want to discuss a particular thing? That can actually be really valuable. In fact, some of my more valuable mentorship things have made me mad. You have a discussion and you get feedback about something and it's not always a positive thing. And so it's sort of like, I feel very confronted. I'm also an introvert and very concerned about not making other people feel awkward or bad. And so sometimes I can get the feedback and feel really like, oh shit, sorry. I really messed that up. And like, I feel really bad about it. But then it's not really about whether or not I did something right or wrong. It's learning about that feedback and then moving forward. And so I think everybody should ask for feedback, even from peers that are on your same level. That can be really, really helpful. And it can be really transactional mentorship too. Because you don't have to have this ongoing forever relationship. You can just have it be specific to a point in time. Or it can continue. That just sort of is up to the two people involved.
Tom, I think we need to have a future episode about giving and receiving feedback. We'll have to find someone who can cover that topic. Well, if it's not you.
Yeah.
All right. We have to wrap up a little bit. We have one, I guess this is more of a public service announcement. Oh, dear. This is more of a public service announcement with a little bit of discussion. They're running rapidly out of time. But on the subject, we've touched on side gigs, on giving mentorship, on giving influence in open source communities. And we actually have a little announcement kind of from Google, I guess, if we want to say that, that ties up a lot of those. If you've been involved in any software development, you'll know that Google has for quite some time run a Summer of Code, where they give out mentorship and grants and things to small projects. And for the first time, pushed forwards by an active member of our community, Sarah Maddox in Sydney, they are having a season of documentation. I'm not entirely sure what season, but I don't know if it matters. Where the basic summary, there's actually quite a lot of documentation, so you can go and have a read. The basic summary is there'll be a 3-month period where a writer gets to work with an open source community, and there will also be mentor organizations involved as well. It's quite interesting. I am personally going to put in some applications. I am on various sides, actually. But it's quite interesting to see for once, because we often, I work a lot in the open source area, and the most frequent comment is lack of documentation, mostly because these projects have no resources to fill that problem. So it's quite an interesting proposal. I don't know if either of you have had a quick look at this and have any opinions or thoughts or advice or or comments.
Sorry, I was trying to unmute desperately and the little mute button wouldn't show up. I've had a look through this. It's actually really interesting, and I find this kind of maybe a fascinating project. Other than that, I guess it's not really something that you can do informally, because initially I was thinking, oh, that'd be really cool, but it's actually quite a dedicated thing that you would be doing. So I think that's really cool.
It's a side one. There was an interesting fund here in Germany called the Prototype Fund, which was meant for particular open source projects, which I think was somewhat comparable in that it was a particular period of time and a particular kind of stipend, and that project actually got some quite interesting results. So it's not like you don't have to commit your entire life, but there is a fair chunk of commitment.
I think it's such a cool idea that a company can sponsor internships like this or just, you know, these relationships without having them all be benefiting their own company. You know, that's great. Just shows their dedication to giving back and fostering open source and their sense of championing a documentation culture and its importance. So yeah, I think if people are looking for an opportunity, they should really go for it.
Yep. And for other opportunities, so Call for Papers and things like that have all closed for Portland, right, the docs, but I'm guessing there's probably still an opportunity to volunteer if you want to. Don't quote me on that, I'm just assuming. If you're on the European side of the globe, then CFPs for Prague are not open yet, but will be very soon, or are open. Again, I should have probably checked that. And also, we have a second European event in Vilnius in Lithuania, which is a great city. I was there a few months back, actually. Does have a CFP open, and that should be an interesting conference in a different sort of part of the world. The Baltics is very very entrepreneurial and quite inspirational in that way, and their telco industry especially is amazing. So it's a very different place to kind of go and experience and see what companies up there are up to. So, and that's in June. So the dates are pretty close on that one. So have a look at that too. Apart from that, then of course you can find previous episodes. Oh dear, I'm fumbling all my words today. Tom, edit. You can find previous episodes on podcast.writethedocs.org. You can also find more about the hosts on Write the Docs. I've done that wrong again. Oh, dearie me. I'm doing very, very badly today. It's been I'm going to blame the weather finally got warm, and it's been a long weekend of far too much fun. So,
what is it? It's like 10 p.m., 10:30 p.m. at your time, right?
After a weekend of far too much sunshine. And yes, podcast.writethedocs.org for previous shows and find out about the hosts. You can find us in the podcast channel of the Slack group. And also you can find our email details and Twitter details on the website too. Becky, how can people get in touch with you to discuss some of these topics should they wish to?
Pretty much anywhere. Although I don't have a LinkedIn app on my phone, so that's usually like the worst place to find me.
I'm pretty sure Twitter. I have you as a LinkedIn connection.
Yes, I do look at it, but I don't look at it daily. So I might miss you if you reach me there. But Twitter is a good place. Slack is fine. Anywhere where I'm online.
Do you have a common username people can find? Or
usually I'm at Becky or at Becca Todd on Twitter.
To get and at then, Becky, you must have been there very early.
No, on Twitter I'm at Becca Todd.
Okay.
But in Slack, I tend to claim the at Becky because they're not unique. And there's not a lot of Beckys, so that helps.
I don't know if that's a statement about something. We'll see.
I'm usually the only Becky. There's two other Beckys at Atlassian now, but for a long time, I was the only one.
Cool. So thanks for coming on. It's an interesting topic, and I know one that a lot of people grapple with. I think we have some partial answers that people can consider. I think with everything related to technology, it depends. So take what you find inspirational and interesting and follow with it. We don't have Jared to do the usual sign off. I think I'm going to delegate Tom. You know the tagline.
No, you do it. You do it. Oh. Come on. We got to book in the podcast. So.
All right. Okay. Here we go. I'm going to try not to fumble for the fifth time this show. So thanks, everyone, for listening. We will talk to you again in a month or so's time. And in the meantime, remember, docs or it didn't happen.